Blog Talk Radio.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Our pleasures here, dug our treasures there.
Welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chains, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. My co-host is not with me tonight, so we'll see how the night goes. Now, I am a poet on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. Now, if you find that this show is not your cup of tea, please check out our other shows. We have one to two shows per night on a variety of styles of topics and poetry, something to suit everybody's taste. Also, make sure when you get a chance to check out the poetry anthologies on Amazon put out by Late Night Poets, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. So like I mentioned, now, usually I have my co-host, Intimidus Rex, with me on for Break On Through, but he is, unfortunately, his phone isn't working, or he's sleeping, or something like that. I'm not quite sure what's going on, but anyway, so, all right. So as long as I have, you know, at least one or two other people calling in, then the show will continue all the way to the end, but if not, I probably won't be able to do an entire show on my own, which, you know, I will get it started and see what happens. I see Robbie's Poetry actually posting Late Night Poets that he will call in and do some co-hosting in a minute or two, so that's great. Thank you, Robbie. I appreciate that. And in the meantime, while I'm waiting, I'm going to let people know a little bit about tonight's topics, because we actually have two of them. We have carryovers from last week's break on through, which was, what was that? It was somebody's artwork. Let me take a look at that contest. Yes, it was the artwork of Yayoi Kusama. Very cool stuff. And then our second topic is I ran a contest with the poem The Human Abstract by William Blake as a prompt. And so the second part of the topic will be that poems inspired by that particular poem. And definitely have a great lineup of thought-provoking poetry. Very much looking forward to delving into it. And, if for some reason it does not work out to finish the show tonight, I will make sure, of course, that everybody's poem is redone on next week's show. And so, all right. Well, with that being said, I will go ahead and I don't see Robbie yet, but I guess I will go ahead and get the first poem up and see where we go from there. All right. So, here we go. Grabbing the first poem. And, all right. Up first, I have Mushrooms in My Lawn by Swan Song. And it goes like this. In the deep green grass of my newly planted yard, there are mushrooms growing in a soft, loamy green, with a wide cap, each leaning slightly to one side. Though some lean more than others, and some lean to the left, while others are to the right. I can see the tender gills under the scales, and yesterday in the late afternoon, a silver-spotted skipper landed on one with white and black patches on its wings, flutters for a while and caught a breeze and disappeared over my weed-covered field that I have yet to tend to. I set my lawnmower high so the blades will not butcher those little fungi growing along with the grass, but sooner or later I will mow them down, though perhaps a little tall spot of grass in the yard would not harm the symmetry too much. The summer has been hot and the labor long, and the mushrooms have grown wild along with a host of sunflowers. From seeds that escaped my bird feeders, I have let them take over the back garden, and the last I checked, the poppies are still blooming, though they are hidden by the giant stalks of sunflowers, now just beginning to droop in their heavy-headed prayers. In the meantime, I watch the mushrooms growing quietly, almost as tall as the grass, not far from the oak tree I planted, where the first goldfinch of the summer landed on its nascent branch as it held the bright yellow bird without bending. End poem. And what a wonderful write. And he actually wrote to a painting of several different mushrooms. And I like this realistic look at life in the backyard. Really is quite a bit to me to like about this poem. First of all, it reminds us that you don't have to go far to experience nature, to experience beauty. Even mushrooms growing in backyard can be something beautiful to look at. I like his description of the mushrooms in the second stanza. I can see the tender gills under the scales, and yesterday in the late afternoon, a silver-spotted skipper landed on one with white and black patches on its wings. Wonderful imagery there. I like how he brings in the details, like the sunflowers and the red poppies blooming. And I like how he describes the sunflowers, though they are hidden by the giant stalks of sunflowers, now just beginning to droop in their heavy-headed prayers. Heavy-headed prayers is a great way to describe the way the sunflowers bends downward. Now, this is just absolutely a stunning dedication to nature imagery. And I also had a smile at the part about how maybe a little longer grass wouldn't necessarily mess with the symmetry. And, you know, I totally get that. You know, you want that symmetry, and yet you try to think maybe it's not as important as I think it is. So great right there, Swan Song, and thank you. I'm glad you were inspired. And hello, Robbie. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Glad you could join me.
Well, when I looked at the prompt and I saw that it was William Blake, I was like, I'm like a William Blake fanboy. So I thought, I have all of it. I have his entire collection. I bought it for like cheap but new. Yeah, it was on sale new, but cheap at the Chapters Indigo here.
So will actually be inspired by some artwork that's not William Blake, and then the poems after these ones will be inspired by the William Blake prompt, just to let you know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But yeah,
we'll have to look at that artwork later. You bet. So this art, I see the artwork here for Mushrooms in My Lawn, and did you want me to comment, or did you want to comment? You commented first. You've already commented, Sorry, sometimes it takes me a couple minutes to get into the flow when I'm calling in. So I just looked at the picture here. It looks kind of like that antique, or what's the word? Not antique, but older artwork, and like you see in those medieval indexes of flora and fauna and that. And one thing I noticed here right away was the tension between how much do I try to manicure nature or you know, tame it, bend it to my design, you know, and how much do I let it grow a little wild. And I like that this poem didn't go completely one way or the other. It's an even more interesting narrative when you're kind of dancing between those two edges, when you're kind of have that tension going on. It's like, you know, I'm not going to totally manicure my whole lawn here, but I'm not going to let it grow totally wild either. I think that makes for some of the most interesting thought philosophically and for the poetry. And I smiled myself at the part about the sunflowers, bent down. And I thought about a couple of the things that happen in nature, and we don't necessarily know about them, like when we cut grass and the grass smells, that's it. Like, I was fascinated but horrified to learn this at the same time, that that's its chemical signal that it's under attack. It's basically like its way of screaming, you know?
Oh, wow.
It's like, hey, help me, I'm under attack, you know? and then with the sunflowers, I was thinking about how nature can help us in ways that we didn't necessarily think of, like sunflowers. I don't know what it is about them, but they absorb a lot of radiation, and my understanding is that they had planted really extensive fields of them around Chernobyl to help to try to soak up some of the radiation. And so, you know, nature helps us out a lot more than we realize. But again, you know, it's that thing of, well, you know, if we're not kind to nature, she won't be kind to us. you know, she treats us, I have to put this in the poem, she treats us like we treat her. So, fascinated to see what the other poems, like the Blake poems and the poems based on the art, how they're going to handle that tension between taming nature or letting it grow wild. I'm curious to see if some poems are going to go completely one way or the other. So, Yeah, I'm glad. Right. I'm already glad that I'm called in on this one.
Yep. Well, I have to say, if you've never checked it out before, I highly recommend checking out the artwork of Yayoi Kusama. And actually, if you get a chance, watch some YouTube, a couple of YouTube videos on YouTube, obviously, about her life. She actually was born and grew up in Japan and was highly discouraged, not only by her parents, but by society to be artist. Yeah, and so she came to the United States. She really struggled. She's in her 90s now, and she's still doing artwork. And she uses dots a lot. One of her quotes actually is that her, as she says, my art originates from hallucinations only I can see, which is true. She actually from childhood has had I don't know what she has exactly, but she has hallucinations. And a lot of her artwork is inspired by that. So it's really some very cool stuff and fascinating life. So,
well, I'm going to see if she's on Distant Mirrors. There's a YouTube channel called Distant Mirrors. And it is like probably the best channel on YouTube for art slideshows. And they'll take every – do you know that one?
I don't, but it sounds really cool.
Yeah, it's she'll take one artist per video, and there'll be a slideshow of nothing but their music, and she always chooses top quality, top-notch, like drifty, ambient, soft electronic music, and it's like a primo source for if you want to learn about an artist, like to see their work all in one place. To go there. So I'm definitely going to see if I can find this artist on Distant Mirrors and watch a slideshow and get an idea, especially the dots kind of interests me, like how it would come out for texture-wise. So, yeah, I'll definitely check that out.
Yeah, definitely. And, all right, up next we have Two Tweakers at the Park by Lauren 67. And Robbie, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay. I just got to refresh the page here. Okay. Tweaker 1. Hey, bro, how you doing? Tweaker 2. What's up,
Robbie,
homie?
Oh, Robbie, when you read, you don't have to say Tweaker 1 and Tweaker 2.
I couldn't see the format. How you're doing? How it was supposed to be? Okay, sometimes with these poems you don't know. I just have to say, okay, hey bro, how you doing? What's up, homie? Watch out, duck. What was that? I don't know, but it was close. Damn, he saved my life. Hey bro, you know how we go. You do the same. Hit the deck. What the heck was that? I don't know, but it was close. Man, you saved my life back. Well, you know that's how we roll. Hey, dude, what you looking at? Don't you hate it when people point at us and judge just because we're not the same? Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. People are just haters. They all paranoid. Watch out. Hit the dirt. What the hell was that? I don't know, but it was sure close. Damn, it's getting dangerous out here. Want to take a break? Yeah, I want to smoke a bowl. I thought... You'd never ask. Let's go. Get away from these judgmental finger pointers that don't have a clue. Watch out. Damn. And then at the on the bottom there, there's one or two notes. It says, tweakers, people who use methamphetamines in an unprescribed way when they use too much. And the definition source for that is Judo's redefined dictionary terms. Or Jubo, I should say, J-U-B-O.
Very cool. Great read there. I liked that. And he wrote to the quote that I had just mentioned. And he did a humorous approach to it, which is usually what Lauren 67 does. I did like his use of dialogue how he brought in the idea of these two tweakers having hallucinations that think they're saving each other, but there's really nothing there. And definitely must be some pretty strong stuff they're smoking. But yeah, wonderful use of dialogue, great back and forth. You know, I like at the end, damn, it's getting dangerous out here. Want to take a break? Yeah, want to smoke a bowl? I thought you'd never ask. Let's go get away from these judgmental finger pointers that don't have a clue. And I like that because you wonder if the judgmental finger pointers aren't as much of a hallucination as whatever is getting, you know, thrown at them. It leaves you thinking. So excellent humor, very well done. And Robbie, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
When I wasn't reading number one, number two. Since, like I said, sometimes the formats, you can't tell what you're supposed to read or not. But this one was unique. I'd have to read it one or two more times to give a more concise, thorough comment on what I thought. But like you were saying, it's kind of makes you think about, well, you know, what is the hallucination here? And what isn't, and much as I hate to say it, you know, I see it more in town. Like, it's happening all province-wide. Like, there's just more drug use in that. And sometimes, you know, it really makes you think, like, what are they seeing? Like, I saw someone on the bus, and she just kept screaming, I want to go home, I want to go home. And you really wonder, but then you think to yourself, well, do I really want to know what's in their head, right? And sometimes, and you think to yourself, how there's a whole spectrum of it. Sometimes it's just like, oh, well, you know, it just seems like they think that there's somebody who isn't there. But then there's other times where, you know, what they're deluded about could be something violent. There's just a whole spectrum to that. And sometimes when you're looking at that, you're kind of you're evaluating in your mind, like, okay, what part of the spectrum does this fall under? So
yeah.
It kind of made me think of those tangential thoughts.
And those are really good thoughts. And yeah, because sometimes, you know, I mean, hallucinations are always a bad thing to go through. They're not a healthy thing to go through. But, you know, sometimes they definitely are more dangerous than others. And are you unwrapping a candy bar or something, Robbie?
No, I just,
okay.
I don't know.
Am I the only one doing some weird crinkling?
I think my phone, I had my phone on the sofa there. I was moving it, so maybe that's what it was.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm like, Robbie's unwrapping
a... I have to be more careful.
But, no, you know, you're right, because, you know, hallucinations are never a good thing to have, but sometimes they can be more fun, and other times they're extremely dangerous to the person and you know, the people around them. So really great observations there, and very well said. All right, and I'll go ahead and get the next poem up. And, all right, and I'll go ahead and give that a read. And, Robbie, if you have to move your phone around or make noise, I'm going to ask that you have to mute yourself, please, while poems are being read. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know where that noise is coming from. I don't usually have that trouble, but, oh, yeah, I'll mute myself. Okay,
thank you. All right. Up next is 65th Instance by Chamath Akalanka, and it goes like this. Forgetting shadow's sterile ocean, your brown sand take my feet and roast my eyelids in the sun. Beyond the tear-ridden atmosphere of the material realm, I jump on the waves at your mercy, though it is you who I saw behind him, though it is these waves that hid my screen, though it is this breeze that gave them respite, I think there is in you still the stillness of beyond horizons. I believe in you alone carry the echoes of the brave future that will bring one day a gentle breeze over the cursed brows of the great other half. To you, that gentle ocean on your back, now I wish to climb the salt water to purify my soul. End poem. And what a wonderful thought-provoking write, strong imagery and metaphors. And Robbie, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this one.
It strikes me as very prosaic. It's very kind of an internal monologue, very gentle thought process, very gentle in its ponderings and wonderings. Sometimes with poems like this, it's just you have the tone of, my God, what have I done? That sort of thing, thinking about those kind of decisions in life. But with this, it's very much kind of the ebbs and flows of life. And with the imagery, a lot of waves and such, I jump on the waves at your mercy. Though it is these waves that hid my screens, but there's some of that rawness that's still in there, the wave that hid the screens, but it's kind of couched or contextualized in a more sort of a gentle framework.
I like that. Yeah, there is, like you said, a rawness to it, but within a gentle framework. I liked the use of the water imagery. There's something almost sensual about this, and yet at the same time, almost spiritual. The mention of the water and on the end line, on your back now I wish to climb, for some reason, it has me thinking of the whole idea of how there's creation myths that, that I believe most of it, Native American, or the idea, I can't remember for sure, but the idea that the world is carried on the back of a giant tortoise, a turtle. I like that. There's almost a creation myth feel to this. There's also a sense of giving in. I jump on the waves at your mercy, though it is you who I saw behind him, though it is these waves that hid my screams, though it is the breeze that gave them respite. It's almost like, to me, the idea that you don't find that peace until you give yourself in, until you just surrender. And so beautiful imagery, wonderful, wonderful metaphors, and very thought-provoking and very well done. And all right, let's see what we have next. All right, up next we have Reflection by Daniel Vigino. And Robbie, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, Reflection. A man is a single point of light, as a lone star in the ether, the galaxy that is humanity, a black hole in the skies. It's hard not to see the breadcrumbs I have left behind as burnt, dry, and under-seasoned. But some days I have seen myself as a science fiction time traveler from my childhood dreams, but as a turn to look around, all the swirling lights tangle me. And as the windows reflect so many misread street signs along the way, so many treasures underfoot when I was looking up, and so many shooting stars when I was watching where I stepped. The beginning of all sent explosive particles into destiny, collision after collision, angle after angle, to where the smartest mathematician could predict the Himalayas rising. So is my writing at this moment, a possible prediction, or a conscious diversion from the grandiose plan. I still feel as a lone star along for the galactic ride, and the brightness is not measured by the relativity of the imagination of the constellation watcher, but how far the star itself can be.
Wonderful read there, Robbie, and such a beautiful write by Daniel Descino. I love that he chose to write to that piece of artwork with all the light. And I like how this takes a look at the fact that we are a single point of light, but there's so many other pieces in the puzzle of life. And, you know, there's so many other lights out there, and we find that connection. We find that plan. Wonderful how he says, it's hard not to see the breadcrumbs I've left behind as burnt dry and under-seasoned. You know, sometimes as we go through life, we look at our mundane life and we look at the interaction that we have with the fairly small amount of people that we interact with, and we wonder what purpose it's all serving. We don't really see the trail, you know, but there's that whole idea of a conscious diversion from a grandiose plan. I still feel as a lone star along for the galactic ride. You know, but there's that idea of accepting that, you know, you're along for the ride, and yes, you're a lone star, but there's this way that writing and poetry connects us to other people. I also particularly like the lines, so many misread street signs along the way, so many treasures underfoot when I was looking up, and so many shooting stars when I was watching where I step. You know, oftentimes we're too busy looking continuously in one direction or the other, and we miss what we were supposed to see. Or I also like the part that says so many misread street signs along the way, because to me, that makes me think of the idea that, you know, well, I do myself believe that there are signs put out there by the universe. Not everything is a sign. And sometimes I think people have a tendency to read too much into every little thing. But, you know, it's a wonderful, thoughtful write and very well done. And how about you, Bobby? What did you think?
Well, this really jived with me because, as I've mentioned probably many times on this show, I love astronomy, and this had a lot of, you know, astronomical frameworks and that to it. And what I found interesting is that a lot of times when people think about space and the cosmos and their place in it, they either think of themselves as very, very small, like, oh, I'm just in this insignificant little speck. Or they say, well, you know, like the chances of us being here, they're so astoundingly small. It's like the universe was tailor-made for us. And that's obviously two very different points of view on that. And in this one, he seems to kind of consider a little bit of both. It's like he's, in his thought process, he's kind of saying at some points, well, I feel, you know, small against the universe, but there's other times where he's saying, well, I feel like a bigger part of the universe, which I found to be very interesting. And I'm just going to go back to the rest of the poem here. Yeah, it fit well with the picture because of how, you know, all these different points of light, and, you know, you think of the sky, of course, and you think of all of these different points of light. And I like towards the end where he says, I still feel as a lone star along for the galactic ride. I thought it was a very significant and, to use the word again, poignant passage there. And I found this to be very interesting because I like mathematics as well. And I'm a philosophical kind of guy. It says, the beginning of all sent explosive particles into destiny, collision after collision, after angle after angle, to where the smallest mathematicians could predict the Himalayas rising. To me, I love that line because it's like, it's that idea of using science and knowledge to predict something so abstract, like something we wouldn't normally think to try to predict. And there's just so much you could read into that, and there's so much just going on in there, and so many, like, things kind of bouncing off each other. I love that part there.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And, you know, and I like how you brought up how there's two different thoughts to the idea of our existence within such a huge universe. And so definitely very well said there. Great observations. And let's see, I'm checking where this person is from. Sorry, I just noticed somebody mentioning that that they were trying to call in, but it wasn't working. And because sometimes obviously it doesn't work if you're from a different country, like you have to find another way to call. But all right, so let me see what we have next. All right, that is actually the topic board for the show. I better go grab the next poem and see what we have. All right, so, there we go. All right, up next we have Prompt 2 by Pink Fairy 5, and it goes like this. Prompt 2, polka-dotted pops of fun, ladies hoisery, dressed in partial legs. Prompt 2, loving the neon psychedelic loveliness. I need a black light. Prompt 2, loving this in more ways than I can say. It uplifts my heart and makes my mind dance. Prompt 2, I sing. Prompt 2, you uplift me. I rejoice. You have made my day, my friend. And poem. And Robbie, your thoughts on that delightful poem?
It's interesting to hear something where it pointed more to the sort of psychedelic sort of turn of things, because that's not something that I see too often. And, you know, you see it matched up with the picture there where it looks like just kind of some legs floating around or something. And I don't know if that's what it's supposed to be, or even if you're supposed to try to interpret it. And it's funny because art like that can really make you think in a deeper way about the poem too, because, you know, when it's as abstract as that, you're thinking to yourself, well, am I supposed to be trying to figure out what this picture is and how the poem reflects it? Or is it like, the picture is completely abstract, and so the poem is too. And this one had a very fun loving, not a Dr. Seuss sort of fun loving, but that psychedelic, I guess you could say, sort of fun loving, like, you know, oh, everything's just something, you know, just that sort of relativistic thing. And it has that feel to it. And, yeah, it's very joyful. It says, you know, like when it says, it uplifts my heart and makes my mind dance. My mind dance. You uplift me, I rejoice. You have made my day, my friend. So it's definitely got that fun-loving, free-spirited energy to it.
Yeah. I have to agree with you. I really did particularly like that phrase, psychedelic loveliness. And I like the mention of the black light. She really had fun with this. I thought it was a wonderful dedication to a dedication and a celebration to the colors and shapes within the art and the impact that it makes. Interestingly enough, well, and see, one of the things I really like about surrealism or abstract art is our ability to interpret it however we want. Because interestingly, to me anyways, when the artist did this shape of artwork, she called it phallic artwork, and it was a representation of her love-hate relationship with sex. One of the things she went through as a child was that her mother would have her go and spy on her father, and she had many times caught her father having sex with one of his mistresses. And so therefore she kind of, you know, developed this love-hate relationship. And there was a symbolism within her phallic art of that. But what I like is that, you know, because, you know, it's not like, you know, it's perfectly phallic shape. It's open for interpretation. You know, how the artist sees it isn't how somebody else has to see it. And I like how Pink Fairy Five sees that as lady hoysery and polka dot that pops up fun. You know, it's just really creative. And I also like how she says it uplifts my heart and makes my mind dance. So wonderful, right? And very well done. All right, and up next we have The New Look by Rain474, and Robbie, will you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, The New Look, random dots spread on cots, no one to say us hot, dawned in simplicity, withstood in unity, admiring our authenticity. On my visit to the garden of colorful blooming lilies, my creative mind broadened, and out of my pocket I threw my polka goblet, showering polka droplets, swirling the simple garden into mesmerizing Jordan, as if beauty bloomed in the heaven, beyond imagination, mesmerizing creation. Oh, gosh, it's sublime vision. I love your new look, to which I somehow hook, cherishing to capture you in my book. Oh, wonderful look, come let's hook, sailing across the brook.
Great read there, Robbie. I really enjoyed this poem. You know, Rain474 has a wonderful way of adding drama in just the right spot. Like in many of his poems, he uses the word oh to emphasize a thought, to emphasize almost the idea of surprise. I really like how, because as I had mentioned, this particular artist, and if you take a look at her, many of her artwork, she's obsessed with the dot. And even her quotes, she talks about the dot. And I like how Rain brought that in, not only with the mention of dots, the use of the word, but also how so many of these words are old words that pay tribute to the shape of the dot. I really like dawned in simplicity, withstood in unity, admiring our authenticity. And I like those lines because it speaks to me on the idea that each dot is something individual, but when you start lining them up, they become this pattern, they become this bigger picture. I also like the imagery of swirling the simple garden into mesmerizing Jordan, as if beauty bloomed in the heaven beyond imagination. Such wonderful lines there, very creative and a very almost surrealistic look at the idea of the dot broadening our horizons. So very well done. And Robbie, your thoughts?
The mute monster got me for a sec. This one is one that I'd be curious to hear the writer read, because it had a sort of a challenging rhyme for me, because it one word flowed into the other, and it had like a kind of staccato to me, sort of a rhyme scheme. And I'm not saying that in a bad way, but it was its style, like a swirling the simple garden into mesmerizing Jordan. Like the sentences aren't quite complete; they're like thought fragments. And so that's kind of like the style actually you would have with a psychedelic sort of a thought, right? And or abstract thought, you're having sentence fragments. But the thing is, like, when you're reading, I think the person who wrote it, since they're the one who wrote the thought process, and that they would have a bit of a easier time to read it as they intended. But with this, yeah, like I said, it has the thought fragments sort of feel to it, which is kind of what you would expect, to a degree at least, with something where you're talking about dots and the nature of dots.
Yeah, exactly. I like that, how you bring up the nature of dots and the surrealism feel to it. So very cool observations there. And... all right. Let's see here. I'm just checking some stuff out, bouncing from one thing to the next. You know how that goes. All right. And let's see what we have next. All right. And, all right, doo-doo-doo. All right. Ah, yes, here we go. And... all right, our last poem, okay, 15 more minutes, all right, well, maybe I can get somebody else to call in then, hopefully, so, you know, and if not, I'll just plug along. Okay, so up next, we have Dream Analysis by Grant 12. And Robbie, I'm going to have you read that because, well, if you're only going to be here 15 more minutes, I'm saving my voice.
Dream Analysis, a succession of prayers said before walking. My enemy's blood in jars for the taking. To lose sight of land while I swim out to sea. A helicopter crash that could have been me. Faces of family from clouds in the sky, along with those friends, all of whom had died. In colored filled tapestries not found on earth are just some of the things I dreamt of since my birth. Malevolent forces who seek my demise don't hide their intent but wear a disguise. Breathtaking vistas with a home by the sea are just some of the things I found waiting for me. I once read from a book whose words were profound, with my hands turning red from all the gold that I found. To become so frightened that I let out a scream. What does it all mean, all these things that I dream?
Sorry, I forgot to unmute myself. Wonderful dream, a read there. You know, beautifully written couplets. I honestly don't write in couplets much myself, but I admire them. I admire them because your choice of imagery, your choice of rhyme has to be very spot on, because you only have two lines in which to say what you want to say before moving on to the next thought. And so there has to be this sense of connection. I really like how he takes this has wonderful rhyme and flow. I thought it had excellent dark imagery. I like that it pulls the reader into a land of dreams. And he offers us up, he shares with us the many different dreams that that he has had, which fits really well with the artwork because there is a dreamlike quality to it. I once read from a book whose words were profound, with my hands turning red from all the gold that I found, to become so frightened that I let out a scream. What does it mean to these things that I dream? And I like that he ends with that question, what does it mean? You know, because it, to me, analyzing dreams is so fascinating. My mom actually used to have a book, and I should see if I can, if she still has it around somewhere, but and dig it up. And the idea of the symbolism behind imagery and dreams. So I just thought this was a wonderfully fascinating write and very well done. And your thoughts, Robbie?
Well, the couplets had matched well with the structure of individual dreams and individual thoughts in dreams because they're all very self-contained. And I really related to this poem because maybe it's because of my epilepsy and just being kind of naturally hyperactive. But I'm someone who dreams a lot. So I'm always, my mind's always jammed up with images and all that, and I'm always figuring things out. And, you know, I like that he put that at the end. Let me just scroll down. What does it mean, all these things that I dream? And, oh, yeah, and just before that, when he says, to become so frightened that I could, that I let out a scream. And I relate to that a lot, too, unfortunately, because, for that part, because I am prone to nightmares. I think I know for a lot, at least for the previous 5 years, you know, I've gone through a lot of stuff, like COVID, of course, but other things as well, like a little bit before COVID. So, yeah, you know, my mind's still filtering out all the things that I've gone through, and I think that was the perfect way for him to end this poem, because he's talking about when his dreams scare him and what do they all mean. And I think, yeah, that's a very natural ending to a poem about dreams.
It really is. It really is. I have to agree. And, oh, good. I see that as long as I can send her a link, then Weaver will be able to call in. So awesome. I will have to go ahead and do that. All right. So give me a moment here. While I go ahead and do something that I need to do, why don't you just go ahead and tell us about your day, Robbie? Like what interesting things has been going on with work?
Well, we're not anything terribly interesting, but we're going over to Halloween stuff already, and it's when you work retail, you see just how fast that is. Like, retail is like its own cycle of time. It really is. Like, I saw the dreaded C word Christmas candles. They were like stocked way, way, way in the back, like not on the floor, but way in the back somewhere. And so you see that and it's like barely October and you're like, oh my God. not barely October. Yeah. It's still only September, but they're already like tucked away way in the back there. So it's, when you work retail, you really see how retail's lives in its own time frame.
That is so true. That is so true. And I apologize for having you talk about yourself. I know that's not always the most comfortable thing to do, but I cannot, you know, type and talk at the same time. And in order for Weaver to call in, I had to type out her email address and send her an invite. But yeah, I like what you had to say. And me too, as I've mentioned before, I think anyways, that I have epilepsy. And while I don't have a lot of nightmares, the ones when I do have them, they're very intense. And between the epilepsy and the narcolepsy, I have a lot of those kind of ways that your mind screws with you when it becomes, you know, extremely exhausted, and especially when it comes to dreams. So Before I forget,
I've been taking magnesium in D3, and it's helped. I would say it's helped a lot. Of course, I would say, you know, of course, there's always the precaution, you know, consult with your doctor and that. But I take just a very preliminary, just a extra, what would they call it? Just a very preliminary sort of dosage, eh? Like just a very, yeah, small supplement, very small standard supplement, like, you know, 1,000 standard units for the vitamin D and 100 milligrams would it be for the magnesium. And yeah, it took about a month for it to kick in, but it did take off the worst edge of especially my nightmares and that. So.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, magnesium is important stuff. And, you know, like up here where I live in the north, we don't get a whole lot of sunlight. So especially in the winter
Same
months.
Here.
So vitamin D is very important because, it, you know, we oftentimes, you know, don't get enough sunshine, the vitamin D naturally from the sunshine. So we have to get those supplements in. And, yeah, but before you head off, Robbie, I would like to make sure that you're here with me to comment on this poem that I put up next, because we've got a new listener, Peacock Secrets Poetry is hanging out in LMP, and has contributed a poem for the show, and I want to make sure that they're able to get at least two commenters on their poem.
Right.
All right. And so this is Sun to Sun by Peacock Secrets Poetry, and it goes like this. On the East Coast, you can watch the sunrise over the Atlantic Ocean, but the sun always sets over land on the West Coast. You can watch the sunset over the Pacific Ocean, but the sun always rises over land. In my life, I have lived on both coasts, east and west, watching suns rise and sunset. I've been where the day starts and how it ends. I hope to see my whole life one day, where it rose and how it sets. End poem. Oh, that is just absolutely a beautiful write. And your thoughts, Robbie?
Oh, well, the very, very first thing it made me think of was Maui. Because where I live, the way the sun sets and rises, well, it, just situationally where I am, it tends to, like our days really stretch out. And we had, I had like one of my, someone from LA was visiting. And she says, boy, your days just stretch out here. And, but when I was thinking of Maui, because when I saw the sunset there, it's like, it's literally like you're looking up, oh, the sun's setting, oh, it's gone. Because you're right at the equator, right? So because of that, the sun just has like nowhere to go afterwards. It's just sunrise, sunset, you know? And it made me think of, in a very nice poetic way, of how the sun is different in different locations. So I was making that comparison in my mind of how, you know, in Maui, it's like it's in fast forward. It's practically instant. And then where I live, it's very much a gradual process. And, you know, and our days, like in the peak of summer, our sun will set, well, like at something like 10:30-ish. And I never thought about that is probably late compared to some other places. But then when I had my visitor there from LA, and she commented on, I was like, oh, okay. So yeah, it was nice to hear that in a phrased in a nice flowing poetic manner. And I could see here in her poem his poem that they've lived life all over too, right? So they've seen the sun in different other places. So they've probably had some sort of a similar experience too, where their experience of sunrises and sunsets has been different from place to place.
Yes. And I like that. I like how they really say so much in two stanzas. How, first of all, they touch on the technical aspect of the sunrises and the sunsets. I remember watching the sunset over the Pacific Ocean, and it was so beautiful. And the one other really beautiful sunset I saw was the sun setting over the Grand Canyon. And they were just both such memorable moments. And I did not actually know that about how, as they say on the East Coast, the sun rises over the Atlantic Ocean, but, you know, sets over the land. And on the West Coast, you know, it's the opposite. I think that's really great. I love learning new things through poetry. And I like how at first it's very, like, non-metaphorical in its presentation, but then they flip it into a metaphor, into the idea of the many different things and experiences, the many different experiences we have in life, and how when we get to the end of that life, we hope to see where it rose and how it set. You know, we hope to see, to me, that really speaks on the idea of wanting to know how our lives impact other people. And I have to say that for being an off-topic pre-write, I thought this actually worked really well with both topics, because using the sun, you know, is a dot. I mean, and that actually goes well with one of the artist's quotes that talks about how the sun and the moon, dots represent the sun and the moon. I also really like how there's whenever I read imagery, like writes that are very nature orientated, they come across to me as very spiritual. And because William Blake's poetry oftentimes tended to be spiritual, I feel like it fits with that also. So thank you very much, Peacock Secrets Poetry, for sharing your write with us. Very much appreciated. You're always welcome to write for any of our shows, and we'll hopefully be able to help you get this figured out, how you can call in, because you're always welcome and encouraged to call into any of the Late Night Poets shows. And thank you very much. All right, Robbie, I know you said that you had to get going, and I do appreciate the time that you were able to give. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I'll be continuing to listen for a little while, especially since it's Blake stuff. But I'll just be listening and occasionally catching up on chat there.
All right. Sounds good. You have a good night.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
All right. And I see just in time. It's like the passing of the torch. Oh, my goodness. Hello, Kate. How's it going? Can you hear me? Shoot, I can't hear you, Kate. Are you on mute? Oh, I hear some moving around. I hear you breathing, Kate. And moving. Ah, just fixing the mic. Okay. All right, well, while you're doing that, I'll go ahead and grab the next poem. And Peacock's Poetry, it was definitely nice to meet you. Feel free to hang out whenever, as much as you want, or whenever you want. All right. And Is that mic fixed yet there?
How can you?
Okay. Ah.
I'm trying to get.
Are you with me now, Kate?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you doing? How are you doing, Kate?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I seem to be hearing two of you.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I don't know why that's happening. Huh. That's
weird.
I've got
a delay. Right. Give me a moment. I'll try and do something here. I don't know what I've done. Maybe I've got two lots switched on.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. And all right. So in the meantime, I will go ahead and move forward while Kate works on her microphone. And so the time when I run contests, I tend to do multiple prompts. But every once in a while, I like to see what people get from just one prompt. And that was the case in this contest where I decided to put up the poem, The Human Abstract by William Blake. William Blake being one of my favorite classic poets. And before we get started with the poetry inspired by his poem, which I always tell people when I run a contest that they can be inspired with a poem prompt, that they can be inspired by any part of the poem or the general vibe that they get from it. So I've put up The Human Abstract by William Blake, and I'll go ahead and give that a read. Pity would be no more if we did not make somebody poor, and mercy no more could be if all were as happy as we. And mutual fear brings peace till the selfish love increase, then cruelty knits a snare and spreads his baits with care. He sits down with holy fears and waters the grounds with tears, then humility takes its root underneath his foot, spreads the dismal shade of mystery over his head, and the caterpillar and fly feed on the mystery, and it bears the fruit of deceit, ruddy and sweet to eat, and the raven his nest has made in its thickest shade. The gods of the earth and sea sought through nature to find this tree, but their search was all in vain. There grows one in the human brain. End poem. And Weaver, are things sounding better for you?
Yes, I think so. Can you hear me okay?
I can, yes. I can. I'm so glad you were able to call in because Robbie had called in, which was really nice of him. But he had said, you know, I only have 15 more minutes I can stay. And it was like, you know, as soon as he dropped, you called in. So it was like the passing of the torch.
Very much like that. It was sheer luck because I've had my usual 2.5 hours sleep. So I woke up about 3 o'clock. And I was playing on my Kindle. And I thought, I'll have a little look and see what's going on. And it was at that point when I tuned into you that I heard you saying that Robbie was going, so I thought, why not? Let's try and get through, because I know how difficult it can be for me to get on, so put him here.
Very cool. I like that. Yeah, I don't know what happened with Rex, but I tried multiple times to call him in, and his phone kept saying, sorry, this caller is not accepting call, or this person is not accepting calls at this time. So,
oh, no. No.
Yeah. But hopefully he's getting some much-needed rest. So, anyways, what did you think of that classic poem by William Blake?
Yes, I have actually read this before a few times. I think it's obviously, I mean, the human abstract, you know, there's going to be very deep and very interesting, and it certainly is. Although, you know, I kind of, when I read something like pity would be no more if we did not make somebody poor, and mercy no more could be if all were happy as we. Now, see, I can't agree with that, because I don't think there has to be unhappy people or poor people. So I don't think, you know, you can be poor, obviously, but if somebody helped you, that's great. Well, what we have here is, you know, you're not going to have this unless you have that. There is no day if you don't have night. There is no white if you don't have black. I don't kind of agree with that so much. That I find a little bit difficult. But the rest of it I thought was very, very good. A mutual fear brings peace. See, till selfish love's increase. So basically he's telling us what should happen, you know, because we don't really want people to be... that's how I take it anyway. That's my take on it. He's basically letting us know that you can do something with your life, but you need somebody else to help you sometimes. But yeah, very, very profound. Yeah, and I admire his work.
Oh, absolutely. Me too. Me too. And I like that you brought up that first stanza, you know, and I'm not really 100% sure if he meant that as kind of a bit of a bite of irony, or if that's how he really believed. I don't know for sure, but I like how you brought that up, because that does make for, you know, thought-provoking discussion, is the whole idea, would we know good if evil didn't exist? And I'd like to think that yes, we would, though maybe we wouldn't appreciate it as much, you know. And I like how this, you know, this is wonderful all the way through, and you know, I like the spirituality in it. And soon spreads the dismal shade of mystery over his head, and the caterpillar and fly feeds on the mystery. There's wonderful near rhyme to this, with words that almost but don't quite rhyme within that stanza. And I like how he mentions that the end, the gods of the earth and sea sought through nature to find this tree. You know, looking for that tree of you know, the what was it, mystery, wisdom, humility, and trying to find all that, and the search. I like how he says, but their search was all in vain. There grows one in the human brain. You know, it's, and what that says to me, that what that speaks to me about is, yeah, there's a lot of mysteries out there in the universe, but the human brain is so fascinating that there's mysteries to be found right in there. There's mysteries, there's answers, you know, there's so much to delve into. So, wonderful classic poem, and I'm definitely looking forward to reading, you know, delving into the poems that were inspired by that, right? And with that being said, I will go ahead and put up the next right, which is, I Am a Commodity Broker, Are You? By Time Teller. And Weaver, would you give that a read for us, please?
I certainly will, no problem at all. There we are. We all die in poverty eventually. You will, just like me. For health is the last frontier, the last commodity we have to bargain with. When the ravens nest at our door, you will sell your kidney like a whore, like the slut you shame through fear and mistrust of your willpower. Yes, health has always been a useful tool in pity, rich or poor, young or old, and now upon our death will be our last coin of inheritance. Sign this with your last dying breath, so others may benefit, and your family left behind may be able to afford their bills. End poem. Are you
wonderful,
on
your... I was, yes. A wonderful read there. This is a powerful, hard-hitting write. I like how it takes a look at the way we judge other people. I really like when the ravens nest at your door, you will sell your kidney like a whore, like the slut you shame through fear and mistrust of your willpower. I like that they bring up that time telling that stanza mentions how we shame oftentimes, you know, people will shame other people for their lifestyle, for their choices, for you know, the maybe like the mistakes they made. And yet at the same time, how can you judge, how can you point fingers if you don't know that person's life, if you don't know what's going on with them? I like also it says, and now upon our deaths will be our last coin of inheritance. And that's a great right, a great part to me, because there's a kind of a duality. It's very layered and thought-provoking in the idea that it not only speaks on an inheritance that we pass along, and what is that inheritance? Is it just money, or is it something more valuable? But it also gives thought to the gold coins placed upon the eyes as they cross the river Styx. So really just a wonderful write and very well done. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Yes, this is beautifully written, and it's very, I love it. It's very clever. I like it a lot. We all die in poverty eventually. You will just let me. That, maybe. Maybe we're running out of time, but not necessarily running out of money. But I do love the fact that he says at the very end, you will have nothing at all to bargain with. You know, you're going to go. That's it. There is nothing else you can do. Our last coin of inheritance is our death. Yeah, I think that's very, very, very good. And also the fact that you sign with your last dying breath so others may benefit. Like, basically, that is what happens. You go through your life, you work, you save, you know, you do your best. But you don't have anything to bargain with at the end, because death is powerful and probably doesn't need your money because he's got all those gold coins. Doing well. He's doing okay. Yes, I do. I think this is a very, very good write. Thank you, Time Teller.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. I like how you mentioned, and I do have to agree that obviously we leave it all behind. You know, you can't pack it and take it with you. So very true there. All right. And let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have Another Wing in Prayer by Liquid Mind Forever. And I will go ahead and give this a read. Moonlit obstruction serenely careens off strapless shoulders. Bustiers press divest breastbone foam prosthesis in Thomas. Cones. Dandelion tease, sneeze, prisoners wheeze, attempt to please, but ease escapes, breath camps. Hoard the lord of ties, SB say goodbye, don't lie, don't buy, try, defy, why. All cry then pry to tie off knots of pretense, milk the teat of human blindness on all fours, weather forecast, holocaust debris, lead me not to into temptation, rather disrespect all inhibitions, rather disrespect all inhabitants, leading to equality among orangutans. End poem. All right, and Weaver, your thoughts?
I suppose you really had to ask me, didn't you? I'm going, maybe I'm not going to be here. Maybe I'll be on mute. I do find this a little bit difficult. I have to be very honest. Abstract.
Well, I can go ahead and, yeah, I was going to say, I can go ahead and comment.
Please do.
Yeah, and that'll give you more time to kind of take a look at it. Yeah, well, first of all, I like her form, and I did feel bad that there was a couple that I couldn't quite figure out. And I'm still not sure what the word K-O-A-N-S is, but cone sounded good to me. So, but wonderful formatting. As always, she's got edgy poetry. I feel like, to me, there's this teasing of sensuality within the thought, as it says, moonlit obstruction serenely careens off strapless shoulders, bustiers pressed to vest breastbones. It feels like, I also really liked Horde, the Lord of Tithes. I like that because it makes me think of the book The Lord of the Flies, which is one of my favorites. But it goes to me in the idea of, like, if anybody who's read the book knows about these kids who get stranded on this island and basically try to figure out who's in charge and, you know, start killing each other. And because it says ties instead of flies, it makes me think of the whole attitude of some people in the business world, how it's like a dog-eat-dog world, milk the teat of human blindness. I really like that phrase, and I like how she had blindness curve out, almost like the idea of an eye, like the way the eye curves. And to me, that's how we live, like people, I think that connects well with the Lord of the Ties part, because it's this idea how, social media, media, the news, and businesses oftentimes need people to be blind. They need people to be stupid because they need to sell their ideas. And leading to equality among orangutans is a great ending. Which, you know, actually makes me think of the book Animal Farm with the pigs becoming humans. But, I like the idea of no longer seeing what really it means to be human, to be humanity, where at one time it meant being something beautiful. It now means so many times being not physically ugly, but emotionally and spiritually ugly. At least that's what I get from it. You know, I mean, obviously many times I've been wrong and I have no shame in being wrong because all I can do is share my thoughts, but definitely a powerful write and very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
Well, as you say, yes, it's a really well written piece. I love the shapes. When you have the words running down the page, as you say, that one particularly, the eye shape in blindness that looks as though it's an eye. But an awful lot of work is put, an awful lot of thought is put into the presentation as well as the words, which I appreciate. I think that's very clever. But I do like moonlit obstruction. Serenely careens. Oh, yeah, I got it. Off strap the shoulders. Yes, okay, that's very nice. That's the moonlight. The point of your shoulders was very nice. I did try and find out what cones represented or was, and all I could actually get was the path of Zen. In a religious context, the cone is a method to break through ignorance, delusions, and deeply self-held beliefs that are just not so. It could be that. There's an awful lot of different things, but that seems to be the one that might have more, you know, more point to in this particular piece of poetry. But here we have, look, dandelion, tease, sneeze, prisoners wheeze, attempt to please, but ease escapes, breath counts. That is a very profound little standard there, isn't it? I think it's very, very good. I probably have to do a lot more reading and thinking about it, because it is very full of everything, metaphors, all over the place, which is wonderful. So yes, interesting, entertaining, and I'm glad that you read it.
Yeah, I wish Rex could have been here so I could have made him read it.
Clucky
probably would have understood it better than either of us, but, you know, but still, that's all right. All right, well, up next we have Bleak Shadows by Julie Buck. And Weaver, will you give that a read, please?
I certainly will. You have to bear with me while I refresh this good old computer is about as old as I am. Bleak Shadows, I've got you. Okay, this looks very good. Humble my fat ass. What do fears have to do with becoming grounded? I water my baseline with water and save my tears for the unfounded. Rapidly advances the bleak shadows, always bleak. And mankind feasts with imagination weak, always weak. Refuse to follow domination, trust the bullshit and all the lying, seek exclusive moments, no death is always dying. End poem.
Great read, Weaver, and what a wonderful write by Julie Buck. I always like how she doesn't hold back on the punches. Like, she really brings the attitude from the first line. Humble my fat ass. What do fears have to do with becoming grounded? I like that she has that question in there. I also like, and mankind feasts with imagination weak, always weak, refuses to follow domination. Trust the bullshit and all the lying. Seek exclusively moments, knowing death is always dying. Knowing death is always dying is a very thought-provoking right. But a line. And the idea that, you know, we're always looking for ways to avoid death, to, you know, advance life. And I like how this says, and mankind feasts with imagination, weak, always weak. I feel like the use of weak after imagination says something about the idea of how we don't really use our imagination enough, or maybe we use it too much. I don't know for sure. Definitely a thoughtful write and very well done. And Weaver, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yes, this one really speaks to me. I think I basically agree with everything that I'm seeing here. Mankind, in Great Britain, we say we're living in a nanny state, as in a nanny state, because everything is done for us. I mean, even things like youngsters going going for different jobs, and if they don't get taken, they start saying that, you know, there's a bias against them. Everybody's got to have everything. They seem to think they should have everything, that it's owed to them, and it isn't. You know, life is something that you have to grasp and try and do your best with. You can't just sit back and do nothing and expect it all to be done for you. So I can see this mankind feast with imagination, weak, always weak. We have become weak. And I think, as I say, it's all because people just expect everything. Young children have computers and mobile phones and everything they possibly need, and still you get teenagers being absolutely awful to their families. So it doesn't change. You know, it won't change, I don't think. It's just the way we are. And I think that's quite sad, because we should be evolving to the point now where we take care of each other. It's just so uninterested in anybody else's lives. You know, my personal hate, like we have here, refuse to follow domination, trust the bullshit and all the lying, seek exclusive moments, no death is always dying. I agree with that totally. People actually are talking to you, but they're not listening to you at all. They're just waiting for you to stop so that they can then put the next point they want to put. And that's kind of disconcerting, isn't it? There's no interest. So yes, very thought-provoking. Got me thinking. I thought it was very good. and I particularly like course line.
Yes, yes, definitely. And I like how you bring up that nowadays people so often, and it's not just children, there's adults who, you know, their world centers around themselves, and they think, you know, everybody should be focused on them and it's about them. But yeah, there really is a lot of, and I like that you brought up how too many times people expect things to be handed to them. There's this idea of, you know, not going out there and, you know, grabbing the bull by the ring. And, you know, so definitely, without a doubt, many people don't appreciate how hard life can be and how you need to work for it. So excellent, right, and great comment. Well, all right. And up next, we have Toward the Wisdom Tree by Robert J. Tice. And it goes like this. You're far beyond me, wisdom tree, whose roots run deeper than all pain, and branches reach beyond my truth, but I'll keep questing until death. I thought I glimpsed you in the garden just before I pulled the fruit and took the first of many bites of bitter pride absurdity. When Eden visions turn to soil, deep furrows dig in earth my brow, where I'd sow trifling seeds of thought, expecting harvest sustenance, not barren grounds of inquiries besieged by droughts of intellect or chalky storms of ignorance to slow the growth of memory. So easily you could be found, your canopy climbs through the skies, but I'm stumped here on lower ground. So much escapes these foolish eyes. End poem. And what a beautiful and thoughtful write. And your thoughts, Kate?
Oh, yes, I want a wisdom tree. What a lovely idea. I think that's so well written. You're far beyond me, wisdom tree, whose roots run deeper than all pain. A beautiful couple of lines, aren't you? When Eden's vision turned to soil, deep furrows dug in earth my brow, where I'd sow trifling seeds of thought, expecting harvest sustenance. Yes, it's again, it's kind of along the same lines as we were talking about. As you reap, so shall you sow. You know, you won't get out what you don't put in. And that's kind of what we have here, isn't it? You're looking, you know what you want to know, and you know what you want to do, but you can't reach it. You can't reach that particular branch of that particular tree. Yep, I thought it was very well written and very interesting and very clever. So thank you, Robert, for sharing.
Absolutely. Yeah, I thought this was a great take on the prompt. And I like how you brought up the idea of, you know, we won't get out of life what we don't put into it. I like, to me, how there is this, well, it fits really well with the prompt. It has a great rhyme and flow, wonderful imagery. To me, the word that comes to mind when I read this is humility, you know, learning to be a humble person. And I like how it's about seeking out wisdom, but knowing that it's not always easy to find, knowing that it's not right in our grasp, that, you know, that idea of being humble to our limitations. I really like when Eden visions turn to soil, deep furrows dug in earth my brow, where I sow trifling seeds of thought, expecting harvest sustenance. I like how that goes in the idea that if you're not willing to think deep, you're not going to get the same wisdom that you would. And so I also really like how it pays, not tribute, but gives thought to the idea of how oftentimes we are ignorant to how much is out there in the world to be learned. So excellent lines. beautifully written and very well done. And see what we have next. All right. All right. And up next, we have Mutant Gene by Rain474. And Weaver, can you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. No problem. And I was going to say, give me a couple more to read to give your voice and your eyes a bit of a rest, because you've been going for ages, and I'm quite happy to do a couple more, okay?
Oh, okay. Thank you.
No problem. You know, if you want your voice to rest a bit, I can do a couple, and one after the other. I don't mind at all. Okay, Mutant Gene. Locked in one's crate, the mediocre mad hate, pulling the knife of cheat, slaughtering the holy fleet, and bit the candles of rage woven in the lies of past page, stamping through the forgiveness head, weaving the dark evil thread, yielding the light rays to bring back holy days, full of laughter great, dipped in the syrup of fun fate, regretting my state, seeing my dirty trait, stained with ugly marks, destroying the sublime park. Poem.
Wonderful read there, Weaver. I like the title, Mutant Gene. It's really definitely something to think about. And the funny thing is about Mutant Gene is sometimes, and, you know, he does put mutation evil in his tag for the poem, but sometimes mutations can be a beautiful thing. I mean, yeah, there are, you know, like dark, scary, evil ideas of mutation. But there's also like the fact that blue eyes are actually a mutation. You know, red hair is a mutation that developed over time. And but this is a wonderful dark rite, very emotive, and lit the candles of rage woven in the lies of past page, stamping the forgiveness head, weaving the dark evil thread. You know, so much evil comes about when we can't control our rage, and we can't control our selfishness, when we can't, you know, when humans start lying to each other. I also really liked the lines, shielding the light rays to bring back holy days full of laughter great, dipped in the syrup of fun fate. It's interesting to go from, you know, it's very intriguing to me to go from the idea of a dark and evil rage to syrup of fun fate, which is a very clever line, but it's almost interesting how there's a real juxtaposition, a real almost yin and yang feel to that imagery. They're so opposite of each other. And I feel like the general thought I get from this poem is the idea of what are you going to choose? Who are you going to be? So excellent write and very well done. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Yes, as you say, I love the way you take a poem to apart and explain it. I think it's so good. But yes, I agree with everything you say, obviously. But I think, as you say, that particular stanza, shielding the light rays to bring back holy days, full of laughter great, dipped in the syrup of fun fate. But yes, he starts off by saying that really, you know, we're not doing much. We're just basically killing off everything around us and not believing ourselves, not believing other people. We're just basically landlocked and stuck in our own minds. And we don't look outward. We don't look at the lights. The light's there to show you what's, you know, to illuminate the past and make you understand that you can learn from the past. You know, you don't just forget about it and just say, oh, it's all dark and evil and there's nothing we can do, which is what a lot of people do. You know, what can I do? And yet that what can I do, that one person, if then is joined by another person, then you have twice as much push. And then more people join with the same ideas. And again, there is more power in the amount of people we're looking towards the same thing or working towards the same thing. If you want change, you need to have a fanatic, you know, who will go and pull everybody else with them. So that's how you're going to get your change, I think, if people work together. But as you say, mutants, when you look at a flower in your garden and the bees come along and they're sitting from flower to flower, that's where you get the changes in the flower itself. So the, you know, a hybrid is like two lots of different pollens coming together and making this other different colorway of a flower. I think that's a wonderful thing as well. We don't think about it, but it happens all the time. And people who love to grow flowers do it. You know, they have their little brush and they do the little bit of moving things around to make a different color flower. So yes, great. I think it's a very interesting poem. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Absolutely. And that's a really great point that you made about the roses, the hybrid roses, how, you know, it's by putting the different types together that they're created. Very cool. And good news, I remembered that we actually have a write with a SoundCloud, so I'm going to go ahead and play that, and it'll give us both a break. And it is, yeah, very cool. Trees and Insight by Eric Svensson. And let me mosey on over there, and here we go.
Woods, trees, and insights. Rain stem, trunk soars upwards. Branches out in two lobes. Intricate lattice cauliflowers. Hey, but what creatures come to rest in there? Muses a metaphysical, metaphorical biped. Contemplating early morning veggie garden. NASA says sun gazing opens the third eye. Early to bed, early to rise, yeah, in the wild. Bare feet allow the upper cerebral tree to tap the body's nervous system into the soil. Dig in there, buddies. I think while wide open eyes look into morning sun's round disk, xylophone colors play in sequence. First pink, then green, followed by blue. Shut eyelids and color glyphs unheard of dance in the inner eye. Oh no! Biped spots a wee caterpillar munching away precious lettuce. What to do? They become the quaintest, cutest white butterflies. Metamorphosis, it's called. Caterpillar executioner decides to grant clemency. Addition, subtraction, multiplication and division, revision of our species claiming to be superior. Crown of creation, we're said to have all the angelic realms in all. Since our insertion eons ago, the fuss continues. Gifted with free will, Achilles heel, creatures great and small genuflect. Woods, trees, and insights. The rub is, what thoughts do we allow to nest in our cerebral tree? Ravens, roots, ghouls, and ghosts that spook? Mind of the matter constructs or scatterings of cruel fate. 2022, and a bird's eye view of world affairs would say, bipeds are hell-bent on erasing themselves through bad choices. Instinctively, I dig my toes deeper into the warm soil, close my eyes off enough sun gazing. Third eye drives with even more indescribable light glyphs. A blue crane alights outside the enclosed nature garden. Fine feathered fellow nods his regal head and intones. As a biped thinker, so he is. Pity you're all burdened with that ghastly free will, Achilles' heel.
Wonderful reading right there, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. I got to say, between his reading voice and his choice of background music, I could just totally get lost in that. So many wonderful word choices in this, just so much fun to dive into. I love how he describes the brain as intricate lattice cauliflowers. That is so great there. And I like how he uses the word biped for man, muses a metaphysical, metaphorical biped contemplating early morning veggie garden. I also like, you know, obviously like the birds in the picture that he has, the cranes are bipeds. So there could be multiple, you know, thoughts to using that word. I like how there's really this sense of connection between nature and mankind. And there's this idea of transformation. I like where he says, dig in there, buddies, I think, while wide open eyes look into morning sun's round disc, xylophone colors play in sequence. I like how there's this whole idea of really appreciating the moment, really living in the moment. And I think always the metamorphosis where a caterpillar turns into a butterfly makes for a wonderful extended metaphor on how having an open mind can transform you. I also like how he says, gifted with free will, Achilles' heel. And then he mentions that again at the end, so it ties up nicely. Pity you're all burdened with that ghastly free will, Achilles' heel. What I like about that is because free will is a gift, you know, and to me, a blessing to have, you know, a free will to make the choices you want. But unfortunately, some people so badly misuse free will that it becomes a bane. It becomes that Achilles heel, that point, that idea of what will destroy us. I also really like mind over matter constructs or scattered limbs of cruel fate. 2022 in a bird's eye view of world affairs, let's say bipeds are hell-bent on erasing themselves through bad choices. Really, I like how he mixes up. He's got metaphor, you know, but at the same time, he has some very straightforward language that says, you know what? Yeah, you have free will. Can make your choices, but you know, if you're not taking a look at how your choices are affecting you and the people around you, then, you know, you need to, like, open your eyes and rethink things. So wonderful right and very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this. As you say, the use of the language is what strikes you, first of all. He's allowing you to look at what he's written and think about it. And it's true. Our bird's eye view of world affairs, we never learn. I don't understand it, but we never learn. I was once having a conversation with somebody, and this kind of points to where we are here. Sorry, I'm trying to find, yeah, Eric's, yeah. But Eric, it basically starts off with, as you say, the fact that the Achilles heel that we have is our free will, because we don't use it properly. We don't think of events or think back on events. And I had once said to somebody, the reason that we have what we have now is because two world wars, they took our best and our finest and our fittest, and they left behind those people who couldn't go to war through no fault of their own, you know, colorblind or flat feet or asthma, whatever it was. So in two world wars, we've taken the best of our young men, young women, and so what is left, you know, for the next generation to come are people who may be not as fit as you'd want them to be. And the gene pool basically was a little bit iffy for a while. It's getting better. Things are getting a lot better. But yes, it's a very hard life if you don't think ahead, and even harder if you don't learn from mistakes, which I'm afraid people don't. But yes, I thought it was beautifully written. Very clever, right? Yes, thank you.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. You're right. People don't always learn. Great observations. All right. Up next, we have Speak to Me as If You Know by Grant 12. And Weaver, will you give that a read for us, please?
I certainly will. Just have to get to it. Just give me a moment. This is when I start to press the wrong button and everything disappears. Woods, trees. No, I haven't got it yet. Hang on a second. What's it? There we are. Excellent. I'm sorry, I was on mute. I do apologize.
You actually were not on mute. Could hear you talking to yourself the whole time. Yep.
Well, I was talking to you to let you know how badly I was doing on this. That's weird because the little red light was...
Oh, okay.
I hope it does mute because I make noises opening up my plastic bottle of water and everything. Okay, I'm here. Good, good. Right. How terrible for you and I is man had never learned to fly. No, excuse me, give me a moment. I need to take a drink of water. I won't be able to read this. 1 second.
All right, no problem.
Okay, here we are. Better. How terrible for you and I if man had never learned to fly, without regretting having failed, to finally see his dream prevail. And why relinquish man his quest for that which leads to his success? By biting off the hand that feeds and painting it to corporate greed. Or why in war do men complain how they return as sick or maimed? And failing this, they're made to die. And no one knows the reason why. As true today as at our birth, no one gets to stay on earth for any time without relief, once questioning their shared belief. It warms my heart that politicians still keep alive their grand traditions to collect their checks and keep protected the corrupted class and unelected. And so some seek and hope to find the reasons for the sick and blind, beyond the profits that are found from treatments done to heal the wound. And how do kings meet their disgrace when first seek failure face to face, and in their weakness find their hate, and in so doing seal their fate? It seems to me each generation must find their moment of revelation by learning that the world they own is out of gas and far from home. So speak to me as if you know how seeds into a flower grows, or how the moon can capture light, or why the day rejects the night, or how a man can find a wife and have a child who takes his life. Before I up and run along, explain to me just how I'm wrong. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Weaver. I thought these were beautifully written rhyming couplets, very nice flow to them. I like how he writes about social issues, about things like corporate greed and, you know, the complaints that people have. Yeah, I so many thought-provoking lines within, and I like that he starts it out as a question, you know, or there's a question why, and they're like, and why relinquish man his quest for that which leads to his success by biting off the hand that feeds and painting it as corporate greed. I like that in the idea that, you know, people who own businesses create jobs for other people, you know, and too often times, I think this one kind of goes back to the idea we were talking about before, that people want to get things without working for them. And I really like this all the way through, but especially it seems to me each generation must find their moments of revelation by learning that the world they own is out of gas and far from home. So speak to me as if you know how seeds into a flower grows, you know, and there's to me the idea of how we destroy ourselves, we destroy generations, we, you know, it just really speaks on the idea of not respecting and embracing the beauty of life, and not being thankful for what you have. And, you know, just very social in its thoughts. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Weaver?
Oh, yes, I'm a complete maniac for rhyming, and this is so beautifully done. I love that each little two lines are very good. Yes, he raises so many points. In fact, he was, you know, basically was talking along the lines that I was talking earlier about, you know, weakness, people going and coming back from war, being hurt and wondering why there is no reason for it. It's just man's need to dominate, whether it's with money or with guns or whatever, that they just seem to need to dominate or, you know, play on other people's weaknesses. That's a big scary thing for me. If there was, you know, such a horrible thing, our whole society collapsed, there would be so much anarchy and so much people stepping on other people to get ahead without being stopped anymore, because there would be no police force, no, you know, be all gone. That scares me a lot. That's horrible, because we know that people tend to think of themselves first. When there's a chance that we might be running out of something, people, it's happening here during the pandemic, people were going out and buying like hundreds of toilet rolls and loads of loaves of bread, and basically like a plague of locusts, they cleared the supermarket shelves. And you know, they didn't have to. They didn't have to. We weren't going to get to the point yet where we need to fight each other for food. But that, you know, that's a scary thing. It gets out of control. People panic. And so I can see exactly what's being said here. And I think I agree with it, Grant. I think I agree with what you're saying. How terrible you and I, if man had never learned to fly. Yeah, I think it's very, very clever. We've had so many clever ones tonight. I love that. So thank you.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I have to agree with you. We have had a great lineup of clever poetry, and I have four carryovers that will go for next week. I want to say thank you to Robbie and thank you, Kate, for calling in. I appreciate you both. I hope Rex is taking care and getting some much-needed rest. Join us tonight, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time, for Fill My Eyes and Company with Poetry, and Saturday, 12:30 a.m., Aphasiana at the Weaver will have part sinner, part saint, and Saturday at 10. Wait, I got that wrong. Okay, you know what? I'm honestly not going to try. I know we also have Saturday is, Gray Eye Smith, Bad Company at 10 p.m. And then Sunday, 12:30 is the Solace of Shadows with Robert M. And Sunday at 10 p.m. is Rhythm and Rhyme with Intimidus Rex. Make sure to check out, as I always say, the contest and topic board put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And have a good night, everyone. Have a good night, Kate, or good day. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Lovely to be here with you. And I'll see you. I'll speak to you again very soon. Good night, my dear.
Absolutely.